we present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksby.
Hello and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting from the Radio Times, read by Neil Sleet.
Ketch and Hiranpon get it on. Silent comedy. Guidance contains some strong language.
And our thanks to Janet Wheaton for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Francis Ween and Dave Gorman. And opposite them on my left, Jeremy Hardy and Andy Hamilton. Francis, which authority figure is counting the cost of whistleblowing?
Oh, it's that chap Paul Moores or Moore or whatever he's the lone intelligent banker who was therefore sacked because he said, it seems awfully risky, these things we're doing. And they said, out, you're not our sort. Bankers like risk. That's the sort of people we are. Because they all, in those days, in their glory days, they were all masters of the universe, and they gave themselves nicknames like Fred the Shred and Mac the Knife and that sort of thing. And they were all then hauled in this week by the Treasury Select Committee. Now we're looking for entertainment in these miserable times. We've got this wonderful new game of torturing bankers. So you haul them in. And then I think that aren't they taken out into Parliament Square and hunted with hounds?
It's a strange industry where it wasn't his job. He was sort of risk management. And then
yes,
they're calling
of...
him a whistleblower as if that's an insult. And actually, that's his job.
Yeah.
The only other industry where it would be less appropriate to use whistleblower as an insult would be in the refereeing industry. That's what he was employed to do, surely.
Yeah, and the man who sacked him was then made deputy chairman of the FSA, this man Crosby. Mm. He was awfully good when he was with Stills and Nash. And that, he went off the rails somewhere.
It's a good move, though, isn't it? Putting him in charge of policing the city. It's a bit like launching a murder investigation and announcing it's being headed by Mr. Jack Ripper.
They're still going to get their bonuses rather wonderfully because the government, now it owns all these banks, thought, well, we can stop all these enormous bonuses. But it turns out they can't. Apparently, it would be a breach of the Human Rights Act to withdraw their bonuses at this stage. And so the government pathetically said, all we can do is plead for the bankers to look to their conscience.
Didn't Ed Balls say it's the... What is it, the worst recession for 100
years? Since the Cretaceous
period.
Rather strangely, he said, this is the worst recession, I am sure, for 100 years, which sort of implied that he was older than 100. And then Mervyn King came out and said, this is the worst depression since the war. So I think we should start our own scare now. I think this is going to be the worst depression since the First Crusade.
Well, the former chief executive of HBOS, Sir James Crosby, has resigned from the Financial Services Authority after whistleblower Paul Moore... Whistleblowers are annoying, aren't they? Well, apart from at a Phil Collins concert when they're, frankly, a welcome relief. Sir James said there were no substance to the allegations, so either he resigned just for the hell of it or he's a Mandelson tribute act. Two points to Francis. Dave, whose new boss has a hyper-inflated ego? Hyperinflation, I'm going to go for.
Yes, I'm taking a hint. I know there's a clue in the question. but Morgan Tsvangirai.
Yes.
His inauguration, which is odd, really. You know, when America gets a black leader, the whole world sits to watch, and when it happens in Zimbabwe, no one really paid any attention. But he's the Prime Minister, and Mugabe is the President.
And who do you think has done the better out of the deal, really?
Well, Morgan Tsvangirai is not dead. And certainly that means he's doing better than many people thought he would do at this stage of the game.
Well, and it is astonishing. I mean, I love Zimbabwe. It's a wonderful country. But prices are apparently doubling every single day. I mean, if you ate half your Twix, you could sell the other half the next day for a profit. That's...
The figures are astonishing, aren't they? The inflation rate. I mean, it's one of those things where you think, oh, no, I've not heard that right. The inflation rate in Zimbabwe is 230 million percent, and unemployment is 95%. If that was transposed to our parliament, it'd make an interesting Prime Minister's question time, wouldn't it?
But in the division of power, Mugabe has retained control of the army, the secret police, the mineral mines and the state media, and Tsvangirai has been given the economy. Now, I'm going to guess he lost several rounds of scissor, paper, stone.
I've never been very good at economics, but now you've mentioned this whole Twix thing.
Yeah.
I think you should be the BBC's financial correspondent. Get rid of Heston, you turn up with a selection of confectionery, writing different amounts of it. I think it will become much clearer to us.
Yeah,
it
would be good. You could do that. You just arbitrarily stress certain syllables.
If you eat half your Twix.
I think Robert Preston does some of it for a bet. I think so. Hugh Edwards says, "With me, I have our business correspondent, Robert Preston. Robert, what's the problem?" He goes, "Where?"
I want him one day to say, "Oklahoma, where the wind."
Well, MDC leader Morgan Tsvangirai has been sworn in as Zimbabwe's prime minister by his political rival, President Mugabe, as part of a power-sharing deal. Morgan Tsvangirai wants a stable economy, a new constitution, and free and fair elections. Don't we all? The Zimbabwean dollar has become so devalued it's now worth roughly the same as a banker's apology. 2 points to Dave. Jeremy, which Flying Dutchman had his wings clipped?
Geert Wilders.
I don't know. Is that right?
He's got a cloth. I think
it's not his fault, he's a bit Flemish.
No wonder their country's. Yeah, Geert Wilders, who's this silly Dutchman? And they should have just let him in and he could have come and showed his film and gone away again and no one would have noticed. And he's basically building his political empire on the back of fear. See, I've seen the film and there are genuinely nutty people in it saying nutty things and there are genuinely some nutty bits of scripture in it. But he lumps together Islam as this one evil mad force. Now, I know a lot of Muslims. Only one of them is mad and she's a Geordie. And to suggest that Islam is radically different from Christianity when they're both just Judaism with the jokes taken out. And the Old Testament, I mean, because all the three Abrahamic religions are based on the Ten Commandments, but if you look at the Torah, the Old Testament, you've got God, let's presume it's God saying this, he says, "Thou shalt not kill," and then proceeds to sanction an awful lot of smiting. Because you get the Jebusites, the Canaanites, the Amalekites get smited, the Websites, the Stalactites, all the ites.
Dutch MP want? Well, he wanted to come. He's not allowed to come.
He was in favour of freedom of speech, but banning the Quran.
No, what did he want to do in England?
He wanted to show his film. It's only 17 minutes, and I've seen it, and I guess they'd have Q&A at the end.
But where is he going to show? Just going to show in the cinema?
House of Lords.
Does this happen in the Lords a lot? Does the Speaker of the House have a day off, and they get a supply speaker in and puts a film on? Yeah. Is that the idea behind it?
It was rainy, so they had wet play.
And they can bring games in.
I've never thought before. You're right. The whole of the Bible. There's not one joke, is there?
Not the New Testament. The Old Testament, there's tons of gags. Not the New Testament. Yeah. Leviticus. Laugh a minute. But no. Jesus, God love him. Not a funny boy.
When I first started doing Old Harry's game, I actually read the Bible from back to front because I thought I ought to read the manual. And I don't remember any jokes. Any jokes in Leviticus?
Yeah, there's tons of gags in there.
Go on, do one now.
Two Amalekites walk into it. Leviticus is an odd book because it sets out all the laws for the Jews who are in the wilderness. And the food laws, the kosher laws are in there. These are laws set down for an itinerant wilderness-based people with poor sanitation, which means observant Jews should only follow it when camping. There's stuff about prawns, which is quite, a lot of people have a bad reaction to seafood. Mm. It says, "That which hath no, fins nor scales in the water shall be abomination unto you." Chapter 18, verse 22, as I'm sure you know. but it seems harsh that an entire people should be denied the delights of Guinness with oysters just because God had a dodgy one in Blackpool.
Actually, while we're on this thing about Geert Wilders not being allowed in, did you see that the...
Geert Wilders!
The new Counter-Terrorism Act, which comes into force on Monday, makes it a criminal offence to take a photograph of a police officer.
Really?
Yes. Oh, hello.
It's going to be very tricky at family dues if two of my brothers are policemen. Yeah. It's going to cause all manner of confusion.
Also, millions of tourists are going to be carted away outside that palace.
Is it a cultural thing? Is it that police officers believe that part of their soul dies when their picture's taken?
I don't know why we can't...
What about police camera action and all that?
Yeah, no.
Look at this stupid motorist get busted by the cops.
We won't get to see any of that anymore.
No, just be police action.
Huh?
There'll be no camera.
No, that's all right. It's just that they'll have to pixelate the policeman as well as the criminals.
A diplomatic row has broken out after Dutch MP Geert Wilders was banned from entering the UK to show his anti-Muslim film Fitna in the House of Lords. Wilders' showing to the Lords would have been followed by a Q&A, where the peers usually ask such perspicacious questions as, are you Meals on Wheels? Can I have a biscuit and what time's countdown? 2 points to Jeremy. And at the end of round one, I can tell you the scores are Francis and Dave have got 4 points, but so too have Jeremy and Andy. And we start round two with an announcement from Woman's Hour.
If you're planning to get pregnant, please contact the BBC Action Line.
And do they answer and say, well, hello?
If you're a man and planning to get pregnant, please contact Channel 5.
Thanks to Ian Bartlett of Reading for sending us that.
I always wondered what the duty officer's job at the Beeb actually was.
Francis, where is charity in short supply?
Do you know? I know.
Yes. A few people are donating to...
Oh, we're not giving any money to charity. Is this right?
Charity shops.
Yeah. I don't think that's true.
You don't think it's true?
No. I would like to see your evidence for this.
I feel really bad now because I can't prove it other than Oxfam say
Cite
so.
Your what are they? Sources. Andy's donated some of his old shirts, though, hasn't he?
Are you being rude to Andy?
No. I just really miss... He normally wears this wonderful sort of furry, warm, lumberjacky thing. And
no, that's when he's without a shirt. Different thing entirely.
Can I just say I hate being objectified as some fashion icon?
And I don't think we should focus on Andy's clothes. The truth is, I got Jeremy from Oxfam in Aldershot, so... Do you know, you can get anything in a charity shop. I once got shingles from a second-hand pair of jeans.
They would have enough stuff in charity shops if people just stopped leaving bin liners of clothes outside. They turn up at the charity shop on a Sunday morning and say, oh, charity shop shut, I'll leave it all here. And by Monday, foxes are trying on old ladies' bloomers all over Streatham High Road. What we should do is all donate our clothes on a Saturday and then pick them up cleaned and pressed on a Monday morning. It would just be quite cheap dry cleaning.
That non-shops might go out of business, because where I live, a Tesco opened many years ago, and immediately all the greengrocer, the fishmonger, all the proper shops went out of business, and they were replaced by things that do chakra balancing and sell collectors' teddy bears and things like that.
Mm.
You can't buy a lettuce in Great Dunmow now, but you can get your chakra balanced.
Shingles to the left of me, chakra to the right of me. It's so Radio 4.
Do only people on Radio 4 get shingles? Is it?
It just seems such an unlikely thing.
Class related in some way.
I'll go into the British Heart Foundation place in Streatham and say, do you want the rest of me pasty? Because if I finish it, I think I'm going to need your charity.
Charity shops are running out of stock as the number of donations falls because of the recession. People are donating less to charity shops, partly because they've realised that just one Geoffrey Archer novel can keep a fire going for several hours. 2 points to Francis. Dave, which flagship show is the weakest link?
It'll be Blue Peter.
Mm.
Children's television is suffering because they've put the weakest link on at a time when kids are around, and they're watching that instead because they'd rather watch a ginger bully. The nice, wholesome entertainment.
I worked for years in children's television, and I thought it was because I was in great demand. It turned out they thought I was an 8-year-old with an amazing vocabulary.
I haven't watched Blue Peter for many years, obviously, but when I was watching it as a child, they were always collecting milk bottle tops for the blind. And I kept thinking, there's no way they're going to think that's real money.
They used to melt them down, turn them into postage stamps and build lifeboats out of them. To rescue blind people who'd mistaken the sea for a park. Who Wants to Be a Millionaire in India, and they made the film. They can't do Weakest Link in India, because there can't be anybody in India who is quite as vile as Anne Robinson, can there?
No, but Weakest Link is educational. Where else are you going to learn about the misuse of sarcasm and Botox?
Clips I've ever seen. This is not entirely relevant to anything, but there's an American clip from their version of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire,
It's just the coolest thing you could ever do on any kind of television programme. He's got to the final question, they give him the four options, and he says, I'd like to phone a friend, please. Who do you want to phone? And he says, I'll call my mum. And he calls his mum, and he must be the most confident man in the world. Because, like, you must have doubts. You're looking at four. Even if you think you know, you must be thinking, I'm not sure. I mean, it's $1 million. He calls his mum and says, hi, mum, I'm about to be a millionaire. And puts the phone down and answers the question and wins $1 million. It's the best thing. It's an amazing clip.
Did you think she might not be watching?
But imagine if he'd done that and then got the answer wrong.
You bet if he'd phoned up and said, Mum, you undermined my sister's confidence. She had a breakdown because of you. It's because of you that I'm a transvestite and can't handle relationships properly. You undermined Dad in front of us. That's why he left home, Mum. Bye. That's not my family.
A report by the BBC Trust has revealed that audiences for Blue Peter have slumped to a 50-year low since the move of The Weakest Link forced them to be transmitted 20 minutes earlier. Some kids don't watch Blue Peter because it finishes before they get home from school, whilst the remainder don't watch it because it's patronising and dull. 2 points to Dave. Jeremy, have a listen to this. Jeremy, who's been saddled with the main attraction?
Well, this is quite a sweet story, because the entire country has agreed. Mark Wallinger, who's a very good artist, who did a very good thing in Tate Britain with the Brian Hoare thing, has come up with an idea for Ebb's Fleet, and people submitted all these ideas of, shall we have a collage? Shall we have a nature table? And he said, let's have a big horse. And everyone thought, yeah, let's just have a big horse. And it's not going to be like one of those rubbish Paleolithic scratched. It'd be lovely.
It's 33 times the size of a horse. And they're saying that you can see it from Eurostar, because apparently the site is going to be just a few hundred yards from the line. But it seems to me you'd get the same effect if you put an actual horse quite close to the window.
They could just put stickers on the carriages, couldn't they?
I'd give Banksy 6 months before there's a 33-foot pile of horse manure under its rear end.
Keep calling it, it's going to be called the Angel of the South. It's not an angel, it's clearly a horse, unless I've been some very inaccurate nativity plays. It's...
I'll tell you what, you don't want to be walking out of a pub at Ebb's Fleet at half 11.
Oh, did you see this thing? I like this. Dr. David Nutt, who is one of my favourite people, he is the government drugs advisor. For an extra point, does anybody know what he said about horses?
Yes.
Well, he said it's riskier riding horses than just taking drugs.
Yes, you can have an extra point. He has said that ecstasy is less dangerous than riding a horse.
If you try to ride a horse into a rave, you can bang your head on the lighting. And you'd look really bad and out of place, because that kind of music doesn't really go with dressage.
One of those adverts, horse riding, just say no. She was a really ordinary middle-class girl, yes. And then one day she came home in jodhpurs. Yeah.
Backstreet pony clubs.
Yeah.
It's only a pony. I'm in control.
The story is about the giant 50-metre-tall sculpture of a white horse, which is to be constructed in Ebbsfleet, Kent. The piece will be 33 times the size of a normal horse, and if you want to see a scale model of the work, well, just look at a horse. Andy, which health advice wasn't all it was cracked up to be?
Yeah, apparently eggs are all right to eat. I didn't know there was a health scare about eggs.
Don't you remember Ed Wiener? Yeah.
It was because of cholesterol, wasn't it? I don't think it was because of constipation.
An egg can turn into a swan and that can break your arm.
Actually, years ago, for health reasons, I switched to cream eggs. Honestly, hell of a mess if you scramble them, but other than that...
In America, they do the yolkless omelette. Only in America.
Why would you do that?
It would be a meringue, wouldn't it?
I often end up in America ordering off the menu because I don't eat meat. And I used to get a real problem with waitresses where I'd say, can I have a vegetarian omelette? And they would go, a what? And I ended up habitually ordering a Denver omelette without the ham. And that they could cope with. They could cope with the idea of not putting the ham into a meat omelette. They couldn't cope with the idea of building a vegetarian omelette.
You didn't say hold the ham, did you? Because that sounds really disgusting.
Yes, it's good news. That's 2 points to Andy. It's also safe, after all, to eat more than 3 eggs per week after a study in the Nutrition Bulletin. I must subscribe. described their cholesterol level as insignificant. From now on, more eggs in the morning will be considered a good thing. Unless for a hen, in which case it's just more bloody work. So at the end of round two, I can tell you the scores are. Jeremy and Andy have got 8 points, but Francis and Dave are in the lead with 10. Before we start round three, here's a cutting from Parish Connections.
At the evening sermon tonight, the sermon topic will be, what is hell? Come early to listen to our choir practice.
Another thanks to David Evans for sending us that. Francis, why is getting 3 sheets to the wind now a matter of length?
Oh, dear, oh, dear. They're extending drink-driving laws to yachters and boaters and sailors and people on the briny. I don't think the government has quite got the hang of what sailing involves. I mean, I do spend a certain amount of time on boats, and if police see anyone on a boat going in a sort of unsteady direction, not a straight line, they're going to leap aboard and breathalyse them. I don't, it's called tacking. It's sort of zigzagging. It's a, you know, if you do that on the M25, then fair point. You know, they may have grounds for stopping you, but on rivers and on the sea, you sometimes have to do that sort of thing.
Maybe they figured out that rum causes piracy. You know, like different drinks to, like, whiskey makes you frisky and shandy makes you randy. Rum doesn't rhyme with piracy, but still causes it nonetheless. We have to go to Somalia and find out whether that's true.
Drambuie?
Drambuie makes you spewy.
Isn't it part of the fun of sailing? Aren't you supposed to put your cap at a jaunty angle, neck some special brew and run aground on a swan? Is that not...
You say that, but I've been the victim of a drunken sailor in...
Was it early in the morning?
Was he holding the ham at the time?
Can I just say that some people treat this programme as a bit of therapy? And... Really, Dave?
Well, I think we've already peaked, but I'll carry on.
Is that what he said?
Sadly, yes. But we put him in a longboat with a hosepipe on him, and it was all okay. Drunk sailing can be a problem. 3 weekends ago, I saw a drunk sailor on Old Street Roundabout. And certainly one of us must have been drunk.
It was a problem with the Exxon Valdez, wasn't it? The drunk sailor. I don't know, how would you stop a tanker captain if you're the police? You can't pull him over to the side, can you?
Well, so what do? They say, sir, can you please walk in a straight line and just get off that boat? What am I, Jesus? Under new laws, yachtsmen and canal boaters will soon be subject to the same drink drive limit as drivers unless their boat is shorter than 23 feet. If you're about to get caught, could you just chop the end of your boat off? 2 points to Jeremy. Andy, if you think our Olympics is cash-strapped, which government has turned to the ocean to salvage its games?
We know this, and?
Yeah.
We know this?
Yeah, we do know this. You tell them, Jeremy.
Puerto Rico, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, in Puerto Rico, I've seen West Side Story, so I have to say it like that. In Puerto Rico, they found an old ship with loads of loot on it, and that's how they're going to pay for this stuff. They thought, what we'll do is get this John Hawkins ship.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to get this ship and get all the doubloons out of it. They're going to get all the doubloons and put them on eBay, and that's how they're going to pay. And then, because our Olympic committee's going, well, this is ridiculous. We wouldn't have to do anything like that. Lord Coe's going, oh, what a stupid way to try and fund an athletic event. And then he's thinking, maybe I ought to get that shopping trolley out of the canal because there might be a quid in there still.
Well, that's what
do you think they'll all go to Costa Rica by mistake?
Oh, that was some poor woman who went to
Thomas Cook and said she wanted to go on holiday to Costa Rica and they gave her a flight to Puerto Rico.
Oh, yes. But some people are so fussy, aren't they? I mean, I've met you'd see customers like that. It's two words.
It's all abroad.
It's got Rico, yeah. You know.
Beijing, barking.
She was called Samantha Lazarus, and she booked a flight to Costa Rica but ended up in Puerto Rico because her travel agent used the wrong booking code.
Didn't she notice at all when she got her ticket or queued up or got on the plane that it was going somewhere else?
No, apparently
she
not.
She didn't notice when she was hailing a cab outside the airport.
Do you know what?
She'd even got through customs.
She thought, wait a minute.
No, apparently Miss Lazarus was confused by the fact that Costa Rica's airport is in San Jose while Puerto Rico's is in San Juan. Mm. She also unhelpfully read a Dan Brown on the plane, which robbed her of critical faculties.
I know exactly what happened. One word explains that story. Headphones. Because people with headphones actually have no idea where they're going or what they're getting on. And they just, you know...
That's a good point.
Can I have a point for it? It's a good point.
No. The Puerto Rican government has pinned its hopes of funding the 2010 Central American and Caribbean Games on the salvage of a 400-year-old galleon belonging to Englishman John Hawkins and thought to contain $2 billion of artifacts. If Puerto Rico is building a new athletics venue for 2010, wouldn't it be cheaper for us to invade them in 2012? Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along, Francis.
Many thanks to Professor St. John Bates, no less, for sending this in. It's from the BBC News website reviewing the Sunday papers. A British royal, Prince William, has also been rather busy, according to the Daily Star on Sunday. It reveals that he gave girlfriend Kate Middleton an unusual birthday present, a telescopic sniper sight for a rifle. The paper believes this is yet another step closer to a possible marriage.
Dave.
I don't know who sent this in. It comes anonymously, but it's from the Oxford Times. Two men, armed with a handgun and machete, walked into Stanton Street, John Village Stores, at about 4:35pm on Thursday. They pointed a gun at owner Dennis Ingrey, 58, and demanded he opened his post office counter and emptied the till. But the shop's post office was removed in June last year as part of national closures. And I just love the man who owns this shop. He said, "Look," I said, "look around you. If you can see a post office, I'll happily open it." That's the British spirit.
Jeremy.
It's reminded Humphrey Littleton's son, Stephen, used to work in R Price Records, and there was a raid, and he was held on the floor of the shop with a shotgun against his head, and he said, "Open the safe." And Humphrey's son, Stephen, said, "Well, there's nothing in it. I've banked all the money." And the robber said, "Well, what did you do that for?" And he said, "We didn't know you were coming."
Andy.
This is from Hannah Thompson of Southampton. It's from lastminute.com, and I like it because there's obviously a story behind it. Valentine's Day tickets for the show Hairspray, £62.50. One available.
Let's take a look at the final score. Jeremy and Andy have got 13 points, but this week's winners are Francis and Dave with 14. Before we leave you, here is a cutting from the Surrey Herald sent to us by Brian Innes.
The family of a man featured in our story last week about a 6-year unsolved murder inquiry would like to point out he is a convicted murderer and not a convicted sex attacker, as we stated. We regret any embarrassment caused.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Francis Wheen, Dave Gorman, Jeremy Hardy and Andy Hamilton. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig, and the news was read by me, Neil Sleet. The chair's script was written by Simon Littlefield, Roger Crooks and Lucy Clark, with additional material by James Sherwood and Stephen Carlin. The producer was Victoria Lloyd.